Hello, and welcome to the East Anglian Theatre Podcast. And breaking news, it's cold. Merry almost Christmas, one and all. I hope your Yuletides are turning gay. For those of you who haven't listened before, well, what a holly jolly Christmas treat it is to have me desecrating your airwaves for the first time. My name is Ray Tempesta, and I am the ever-so-festive host of what is the region's premier podcast devoted to theatre in East Anglia. Yes, this might well be the only podcast of its kind, but if that makes me the best by default, then it's a hollow victory I'm more than willing to embrace. If you haven't come across my rambling nonsense of an intro before, don't worry, it's all slightly uphill from here. The way the podcast works has been likened to a mince pie by absolutely no one except me in this hastily thought-through analogy. Section 1 is that tin foil case, no one likes it, but it's a necessary structural element required to shape the pies. It's where I briefly tell you a bit about what I've been up to in the world of theatre lately. Now, once you've disposed of the foil case, you get to section 2, which is the pastry case in all its glowing, buttery, delicate, crumbly goodness. I want a mince pie now. What was I talking about? Oh, yeah, the interview is pastry. And then section 3 is mincemeat, where, I'm still thinking about mince pies. I give a shout out to some shows or something like that. Anyway, enough of that. Follow the podcast on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Subscribe on whatever streaming service you use. Laugh at my jokes. Send me gifts. So, and do check out my website too. eatpod.co.uk. That's eatpod.co.uk. Here you'll find all episodes of the podcast, written versions of the reviews that I produce, and a page to contact me to, I don't know, to wish me a Merry Christmas or plug your show, your choice. Right, now for section 1 proper, where I ask myself, Ray, what have you been up to theatre-wise recently? Well, thanks for asking, Ray. I've been hard at work, sort of, with Open Door Theatre, a brand new Norwich-based company. Now, one of the founders, the brilliant Daniel Sturman, has written a parody musical called Yippee-ki-yay. You may have heard me mention it before. It's a sort of love letter send-up to the classic 80s Christmas movie Die Hard. It's directed and produced by the wonderful creative force of April Nash, who I actually interviewed on one of the earlier episodes of the podcast. And our musical director is the prodigious talent that is Asa Smith. But enough about them. What about me? What's my part in this? Well, that's a great question, Ray. I, like a number of my castmates, am playing multiple roles in this production, including the uptight Captain Robinson, the daft henchman Marco, and a gloriously camp office worker called Ron. Now, most of the cast of 10 are playing at least 3 or 4 roles, all apart from the magnificent Tom Guttridge, who is playing John McClane. Now, it's all starting to come together properly as we piece a lot of previously fractured scenes together and start doing runs of the show. Now, I've done intense shows before, and I've done musicals before, but never have I been involved in a show where I have so many costume changes and am so heavily relied upon for transitions between scenes. It's requiring a discipline of a different sort, as I have to carefully follow my track sheet to know what I have to do at the beginning and end of a large proportion of scenes, which character I'm playing, what props I might need. It's daunting, but it's a challenge I'm enjoying. Now, I'll tell you a bit about my castmates in the coming weeks, but what I will tell you is that the show is beautifully written and has some incredible songs, and I feel so lucky to be a part of it and sharing the stage with some stunningly talented performers. It's well worth coming along. Now, it's on at the Madder Market in Norwich between the 12th and 14th of January, and then at the Galston Pavilion Theatre, funny enough, in Galston, between the 19th and 21st of January. I'll post links to the shows on my social media accounts, of course. Now, let's move on to section 2, and it's more of a feature-length interview this time, as my guests wouldn't shut up. They had plenty to discuss. We'll call it a bumper Christmas episode, if you like. So, let me introduce you to a couple of people who, whilst both being brilliant at what they do individually, when they're together, they are a creative force to be reckoned with. Their names are Daisy Plackett and Simon Michael Morgan, who, aside from their individual endeavours, are co-founders of Strange Fascination Theatre. Now, before I start, let me offer an apology on behalf of my dog, Smiffy, for adding his 2 penneth in the early part of the interview. But I make absolutely no apology for Daisy and Simon's beautiful daughter, Thea, who occasionally joined in with a chatter too. Anyway, without further ado, which is a shame because I do so enjoy an ado, let's have a chat with Daisy and Simon, shall we? Hello, Daisy and Simon, and Little Fear too, of course. It's lovely to have you here. Now,
hello.
There's a number of different topics to discuss, but we'll start with the thing that most notably links you two together, and that's Strange Fascination Theatre. So could you start by introducing the company to us?
Well, we formed it in 2014. We wanted to create work that was sustainable in the East Anglian area. At the time, there weren't that many professional companies or any companies paying any kind of wage, let alone a decent wage, you know. And so we wanted to, being professional trained, we wanted to try and help fill that gap. So we started the company to do that, really. Our first shows were in Great Yarmouth. We did immersive murder mysteries that I was inspired to create through things like Hammer horror films and things like that. We came across this Victoria Museum. What was it called? Yesterday's World. And it was essentially this Victorian town as a museum. It was wonderful. So it was like a film set, you know. And we met the guy who ran the place called Ben Rowe. And he was very progressive and very forward-thinking and very big ideas. And it was very serendipitous that we bumped into him, you know, and we met. And he, because I had this idea for this immersive show and all this, like, you know, find your own adventure kind of thing, and where the audience interact with the actors and get clues from the actors, and there's different endings and all this kind of thing depending on what you see. It was very personal to the particular audience member, but also as well there was a general overview, and it was all based on a kind of improvisation from the actors through a synopsis script that I created. This world where the actors learn all about the world, you know, and then create their characters within. There's certain things to do and all this kind of stuff. It was very much like a point and click kind of computer game, and that led us to make some money, you know, and we had a great success that summer, and we then went on to do an immersive, in the same place, an immersive horror, which was very, very gory, The Ripping, which was great fun.
About great
this, yes, yeah. It was very Hammer horror-esque again, you know. The first one was a melodrama, sorry, I should say. It was a melodrama called Two Hearts. It was kind of Hammer horror-esque elements to it, a kind of darkness to it, you know. But The Ripping was out-and-out gore, you know, and Daisy made all these gory bits and, you know.
But then following that, I think we were at a car boot sale, actually, and both of us with a sort of background in open-air theatre and children's theatre, TIE and whatever, we were just wandering around this car boot sale, and we went, we could put a show on here. And so there and then, we went up to the people running the tea stall, you know, out of the club grounds. Or whatever it was. It was like a cricket club. And we were like, "Whoa, what would be the contact if we wanted to do something in this place?" And we started there, and then we went on. We did
Midsummer's Dream.
We went on to go to multiple venues over the years. So we started off from that one year, just the one venue. And then we increased and increased and increased, and now we're looking at about 10 venues so far this year, I think.
Yeah, 10 venues so far.
Next year.
I trained at the Rep College, which is where we would do a show every 2 weeks in true repertory kind of style, and learning on-the-job training with lectures thrown in for good measure and some guest speakers who come in, you know, and all this kind of stuff, guest directors. And that's where I learned, you know, in order to find out who you are as an actor. Yes, and you know, and to really establish yourself quickly in a role, and get the job done, you know. So we're kind of like that. We like to
We've got thank you, dear. We've got an entrepreneurial sort of spirit as part of our company's ethos. That we can not only do sort of traditional theatre shows, but we can also go into strange spaces or partner with businesses, or we've done a lot of that. So I think we kind of pride ourselves that
We're very flexible with
it. We basically
it, you know?
Do anything.
Mm. Yeah, we're very, very flexible. We've done Lord of the Rings themed weddings, which was that was great, wasn't it?
Yeah.
we've done
murder mysteries,
meet and greets as characters. We've done some of the best things we've done have been the children's activity days, which I love doing. So we did a few years at Hunstanton doing these treasure hunt days, and I'd create this story with characters and props, and the kids had to do all these riddles and meet the puppets, because Daisy makes all the puppets and stuff. And it was really interesting, really exciting, wasn't it? Because we create world upon world upon world, and the kids really engage with it. And for me, those ones were the most exciting compared to you know, going on tour with, say, Journey to the Centre of the Earth, which again was really exciting as well. But for me, it was more of the that interaction with kids on that level, you know. And, yeah, that was fun. So I hope to do more of that.
So as you sort of alluded to, you're back in 2023.
Yeah.
After a bit of a hiatus, so I'm looking at you, Thea.
You're a hiatus, Thea.
That's what you are, yeah. So what have you got in store for next year?
Daisy, would you like to tell the folks at home?
We are doing Alice Through the Looking Glass. So we've done Alice in Wonderland. We've done that a few times. Well, a couple of times. And yeah, we want to follow it up with the sequel. We get to explore all the characters that are in that book that, you know, are very well known that we didn't get to explore in the first one. So yeah, we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, Alice in Wonderland, when we did it originally, it's a very interesting book. It doesn't have much of a plot, really, does it? It's a series of wacky things that happen to poor Alice and whatnot. And that was just a great playground for us in terms of costume and gags and puppets and comedy. You know, I don't think there's a definitive version of on stage of Alice in Wonderland. You know, everyone.
Ballets and things.
Yeah, so everyone does such amazing takes on it. All these other companies, you know, it's always very, very unique. So that's why we're looking forward to Through the Looking Glass. Because as Daisy says, there's all these new characters we can explore. And it was one of our most popular shows. And people love it in Norfolk. People love Alice in Wonderland, you know, and all that ethos. I mean, there's the Norfolk steampunk group who were like groupies to us. They followed us everywhere because they loved Alice in Wonderland, always dressed up and all this.
Right.
So it's a well-loved tale, not just in Norfolk, of course, but everywhere. You know, it's one of our greatest stories, isn't it? You know. So Through the Looking Glass seems to be the natural choice. And we're doing it for very practical reasons as well, because obviously we've got a massive store of all Daisy's costumes and props that we can adapt and reuse. COVID, you know, hit the theatre industry very, very hard. So there's a very practical aspect to try and make ends meet.
Was this one that was sort of delayed by COVID?
It was delayed for several reasons. The most important reason was obviously Daisy and Thea. Thea coming into the world, and we were going to do the tour, weren't we?
Yeah, we originally, our first date of the tour was a month after my due date, and you know, being first time parents, not really knowing what we were getting into, we were like, yeah, we can do this, we can have a baby and then put a show on. And obviously, like, the first date of the tour, that's not the first date of work, that's like You'd have all the rehearsals. I'd have to make an entire show, all the costumes and props and whatever. And yeah, as it got closer and closer, we were like, "Oh my god, I don't know if we can do this."
And we were really worried because we'd made all these commitments, you know. And then we were like, we went back to the venues and said, "Look, actually, we can't do this." And they were, "Yeah, of course." We thought it was crazy.
Yeah, we were worried that people would be like, "What?" But everyone said, no, of course you need to take this time, you know, this time of life is precious, you want to get
relief,
a second chance.
Not surprising.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were very relieved. And honestly, once we had we kept saying to each other, I can't believe we thought we were going to do a show as well as all this. So yes, we're incredibly happy that we took that time off.
Yeah. And I understand, obviously, with Strange Fascination being put on the back burner, you've had a bit of time, I guess, to explore a little bit more other creative mediums. So
yeah.
Could you tell us a little bit about, I suppose, some of the other ways you've flexed your muscles creatively in the last few months?
I started doing art. I started creating art. I'm an amateur artist, and I use that for mental health. I highly recommend it to everyone else. I used it to help with health issues that I'd faced. I managed to get into an exhibition in Great Yarmouth with it, you know, and that was a remarkable thing for me because it showed me that you're not written off, you know, you're not a one-trick pony, you're not someone who's, you know, we're not set in our ways. We can, if we apply ourselves, change.
And you can come into something late as well.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, It was terrific. It's changed my life. You know, it's such a simple act of, you know, of just sitting down and you know, I'm all right. I'm not very good. I'm all right. The point of it for me is that relaxation that I'd never known.
Mm.
I'd never known that peace and that tranquility. And it doesn't matter what it is at the end of the day. It's just that 20 minutes, half an hour and a half, 2 hours of doing it. And I recommend it, you know. Also as well, I'm writing a children's book for Thea that I'm trying to illustrate myself. And I'm stumped with it because there's so many choices to make. There's so many avenues to go down. I'm a big fan of classic children's stories. One of my favourites is Watership Down, where that kind of human culture is kind of placed on an animal kingdom. And to me, it's a masterpiece, and that's always been a kind of benchmark for me for children's literature and whatnot. And so I've been trying to write my own story for Thea about the things that she encounters and the animals that she meets in our garden. And silly as it is, isn't it? So I'm trying to do that, and that's a challenge, and that's purely for her, you know. That's just to make her laugh. And I draw these characters, and I show them up to her, and if she smiles and giggles or whatever, which she does sometimes, she's aware, you know, she's getting more aware, I'll keep it. Sometimes, though, if she doesn't like it, I'll get rid of it. So,
Thea's editor-in-chief.
Yeah, Thea's editor-in-chief. So I've been doing that. What have you been doing, Daisy?
Oh, well, the thing is, I have undiagnosed as of yet ADHD. So I have spent years doing little bits of projects and half finishing them and having another great brainwave. And basically, my relaxation is keeping busy. I don't really know how to just sit and chill out. But the thing about Thea is, you've got to pick her up. You've got to, you know, she needs me. She needs to be held. She needs to be fed. So it's been hard to do those bits and bobs that I normally would do. But obviously, just having her is, in my mind, is a very creative act anyway. I mean, I know that sounds a little bit like pretentious maybe, but no,
I agree with you. I don't think you should make an excuse for
she's
that.
She's so... the seeing the world through her eyes is just incredible. Yeah. It's just incredible. And that is a lens.
You're moulding a human life.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
There could be nothing more creative.
The ultimate creativity, yeah. And so, yeah, I love seeing the world through her eyes. I love seeing what she finds in everything.
Yeah.
That inspires her, that she finds enjoyment in. Also, something I really love doing, actually, is dressing her. I mean, ultimately, I am a costume designer. Mm. So, you know, I am priding myself on having a well-dressed baby and going to sort of car boot sales and second-hand shops and things and picking out, for very little money, beautiful, brightly coloured, nicely textured baby clothes and putting them all together and then I'll sort of slightly match her in some way, and it does bring me great joy.
Yeah, she's a funky baby.
To put her little outfits together. But I mean, ultimately, I am looking forward to getting back into puppet making and doing all that, particularly through her eyes, seeing the things that inspire her and trying to bring that into my work, I think.
So having had Thea, do you think that's going to change your modus operandi, if you like?
Oh, yeah.
As a company going
forward? Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, Daisy's going to have an assistant next year. This is something I've always wanted her to have anyway, which is something you never wanted because you didn't want someone in the
like
house.
Relinquishing control, to be honest. Yeah.
But definitely next year, it goes without saying that...
But also, I mean, I work in our house. That is my studio. I don't have an external studio that I do my making in. And it's so tempting to just bring all that stuff into your living room. And the amount of times we've been in the living room, there've been bits of foam everywhere, little bits of fabric, scissors, pins, buttons, scalpel blades. So obviously I'm going to have to really change how I work. I mean, I do wake up in the night, to be honest, and I think about like jars of buttons that I've got, and I think better places to put them. And like it does, you know. So there's very much that kind of thing as well. But then also constraints of time and what have you.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, obviously, the benefit of doing a job through the years is it takes you less time because you get better at it. Mm-hmm. So I'm in such a better position now than I was when we first started our company. And, you know, I didn't have as much knowledge as I do now. So things don't take me as long, and I can think of good ways to work around things. And
yeah,
but yeah, we will have to. It will probably be quite a shock once we get into the full on making season. But
so 2023 will be an interesting year.
It will. Absolutely. For us all.
Before we get to 2023, that you do still have something going on in 2022.
That's right. Right. Yes. Yes.
So this is the New Stages pantomime.
I'm absolutely delighted to be playing Lord Gluttonous in New Stages Sleeping Beauty pantomime this Christmas, with the fantastic Joe Ballard, who's written it and is directing it. The play itself is a family panto, but it's wonderfully satirical. Joe's really wanted to make it topical, you know, and I feel he's really succeeded. It's been a very strange few years, hasn't it, for all of us?
There's a lot,
you know,
a lot to draw upon. A
lot to draw upon. I think he's really tapped into that kind of zeitgeist, you know, and I think that it's going to be brilliant fun for all the family, like a panto should be. And I've done a lot of pantos, you know, but also as well, I think it's one that people will remember, especially because of how topical it is. Mm-hmm. And it's funny. It's very funny. And I'm looking forward to playing a funny villain again, you know. I've played a lot of panto villains. They're great fun. I played an ogre, and that was fun, but it was just all the green paint that, you know, we're still finding green paint on things. Mm-hmm. That was the makeup, you know. So it'd be nice to be a kind of suave villain, you know.
Yeah.
Lord Gluttonous, he's kind of suave and gets his comeuppance, as the panto villains always do.
Of course.
So that's terrific. That's running from the 21st of December until the 28th of December in North Walsham at the pop-up theatre there behind the Black Swan. So
very
please,
professionally handled. That
thank you very much.
Question.
It's not my first rodeo.
We'll move on from the plugging side of things and on to your own experiences in the theatre. Mm. And what would you say, I mean, this is always a difficult question, but what would you say is your proudest achievement, theatre-wise, that is? And this could be with Strange Fascination or elsewhere.
Daisy?
I don't know. I just love seeing audiences react to our work. I mean, I think that's always the ultimate thing. I mean, there's always a point when you're putting on a show where you're like, oh, God, are we doing the right thing? Is this funny anymore? I don't know. I can't objectively tell. But when you're sat in an audience, I mean, sometimes I'm in the shows, sometimes I'm not. But when you're sat in the audience and you see everyone and you see their faces light up, there was a particular moment that I loved when we did Journey to the Centre of the Earth.
That's what I was going
to
mention.
I stole your...
You stole my moment.
You stole your moment. Yeah. If for anyone like not familiar with the book, there's a moment where all these prehistoric creatures are discovered under the Earth's core, essentially, in the Earth's
and
core.
We made it a bit more dramatic.
We had a dinosaur. What type of dinosaur was it?
Velociraptor?
No, was it an Allosaurus? It looks a bit like a T-Rex, but it's not.
Oh, it's an Allosaurus. It was short, smaller, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Essentially, it looked a bit like a T-Rex.
Yeah.
It was a specific type of dinosaur. I can't actually quite remember what it was. But
I thought it was a Velociraptor.
I think, okay, no, yes. It was
we'll
an Allosaurus.
We'll look this up later. You'll just have Allosaurus.
But yeah, I made a costume for Simon to wear.
That's it, yeah.
That was this dinosaur. So this dramatic music started. Was it the... What was the music?
It was Flight of the Valkyries. Yeah. We always our classical music in our shows.
So the music starts. There's the sound of the volcano erupting, you know. No one really knows what's going on. People are like looking around. Something's coming. And Simon appears from behind the backdrop. And he's a full-on dinosaur.
Yeah,
he's got a dinosaur... head,
yeah,
essentially, that he could see out of. He's got the little arms, he's got a massive tail. He looked much like a dinosaur.
There was an audible gasp, you see. We've got it filmed.
Yeah, we've got it filmed.
And that was delightful for you, because you were in the audience, weren't you?
Because, I mean, it was sort of... It was incredibly ambitious, wasn't it?
Yeah.
To have a full-on dinosaur appear in a little open-air show.
I think what made it so great is because we take the... and it was my favourite moment, so I'll carry on, you know. We take the story, we take the book, and we make it our own. We adapt it to ourselves. So, for example, Journey to the Centre of the Earth doesn't have a villain, so I put a villain in there called Gracken, this industrialist who wanted to, you know,
mine
diamonds at the centre of the Earth. So very, you know, very like fracking, and so, you know, very topical perhaps for our day and age. Daisy made the dinosaur costume look like his costume. So it kind of morphed into his...
Simon played both characters.
Yes, yes. So it was kind of the aesthetic was like it was him.
Sort of velvety and tweedy, but yet also a dinosaur and...
Yeah, and it was, to get that kind of response from it, when we live in a digital age where you've got Jurassic World and everything, the most amazing creations on screen, and indeed those amazing like real life puppets that people put on that are just like prosthetic and just incredible and like thousands of pounds, for us to achieve what we achieved with this kind of whimsical way
in our terraced house,
that was probably
our priority of secondhand goods.
And I loved going out because it got an audible gasp. The kids loved it.
Yeah, I mean it was the right side of not quite scary, but there would be a sort of look of
it's the best puppet you've done, I think.
I did love that.
Yeah, so that's our proudest moment. I think I agree with you there, because I was going to mention that.
Yeah, it sort of stands to reason it might be a collective moment.
I mean, in general, the proudest thing in theatre in general for me is just keeping at it, and I say that to anyone out there who's doing it, keep at it. Your proudest moments keep coming, they keep coming.
Yeah.
Because to keep at it in this industry and with such a backdrop of not to get too political, but the Tories hate us, especially us in the artistic industries, to keep going with such a backdrop. Well, be proud of that because we need your voice.
And it is wonderful saying, we've done, I don't even know how many shows we've done now, but like, tens and tens and tens of shows.
Yeah.
I don't mean to bring the mood down now, but of course, in order to appreciate the highs, you probably have to experience some lows.
Oh, yeah.
So have there been any particular sort of disappointments over the years, should we say, that you're happy to
talk
about?
There's always so many disappointments. Life is hard in the theatre industry.
And I'll probably sort of say... outside of COVID, because I think for everyone that was
there were particular things that was a difficult time. I've been in the industry now for 20 years, right, and I've done lots of tours and plays and things like that, like lots of people. There are specific moments of absolute disappointment. So I was doing, and it's always the same, Romeo and Juliet. I want to talk about Romeo and Juliet. So I did a number of productions of Romeo and Juliet in my past, right. I was touring around stately homes with Romeo and Juliet, and I'm playing Benvolio, and I went on during the balcony scene. I went on a scene too early. Possibly the most famous scene in English theatre, and I go on a scene early, and I realise my mistake because it's all Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, and all the audience is looking at me. There's nothing I can do.
Oh God!
It was horrible. Yes, indeed. So I was like, oh, what's happened? Oh no, what have I done? And so I just closed down as if it was stylized, and I was meant to be there. And I tried to close down in a style. It was probably made it worse. Closed down in a stylized fashion. And just kind of like tried to ride the embarrassment and the disappointment to make it look like it was part of it. But that was a disappointing moment that I hadn't paid attention. What about you, Daisy? Disappointing moment?
Okay, so years ago, just after I'd graduated, I actually made some models, because I also do model making in 1 to 25 scale, which is the scale that you do theatre work in. It's one of the many things I do. I basically do so many different jobs. But I made 1 to 25 models for an exhibition at the V&A, which was Diaghilev and the Ballet Russe. So I made, with this other girl, we made these figures and the backdrops, and we recreated this set design for that had been put on in the 20s. And, it was... I was early on in my career. I was really excited that I had this work of mine in the V&A. But I was very insecure. I was going through a bit of a sort of depressive period. I was very anxious. And I was sent a private invite to the opening. And I never went. Mm. I was too anxious to take the train by myself, because I was living in Bedfordshire at that point. I was too anxious to go into London by myself to go to this thing late at night. So I didn't go. And I didn't even see the exhibition as well. I was working in Germany for some of that time, but I never even went to see it. I never even saw my own work. And I, it was on a plinth. It had my name on it. I never went. And I'm still so annoyed at myself that just passed me by. I've got the invite framed. I've got pictures that I took of this model, and it was so detailed as well. Like this is a very niche thing, but like 1 to 25 scale hands. They said it couldn't be done. I did it. I did it. I made like these tiny 1 to 25 scale person to give you an idea of sizes, maybe like 2 inches tall. So if you imagine a 2-inch tall person, how tiny their hands would be. And they had fingers and everything, and it was like my finest model making work. And I never even saw it, and I'm just...
You don't know how
I'm still so annoyed with myself. I'm just so annoyed still that I just didn't just go and get over myself. You got to learn. You got to learn.
Yeah.
You do something like that once, and you think, well, after now, I'll take any opportunity. I'll make the effort to you know.
Mm. You're still doing it now, though. Daisy does a lot of work for TV and film, and, you know, she doesn't... You don't blow your own trumpet. Like, she was a costume assistant on 45 Years with Charlotte Rampling and Tom Courtney. You don't blow your own trumpet about these things. And, you know, your website would you know, if we got
that's
that sorted.
Thing I need to get around to doing.
Yeah, ADHD, I suppose. But
give me any dopamine, damn it.
she got a cracking CV. She worked on some amazing things. Didn't blow her own trumpet about it.
Have you watched the product of your work, like, for example, 45 Years? Have you?
No.
We do have it on DVD,
yeah.
And I've never actually watched it. To be fair, I was only in charge of like background artists for a certain scene, so it wasn't like I was on the project the whole thing.
Yeah, but it just goes to show, though. I mean, there's another thing, and there's this film at the moment, Little Mary, that you were production manager on.
No, so, I wasn't. I was production designer.
Production designer.
I was production designer, and I was costume designer.
Yeah, and that's up for a BAFTA, and she doesn't.
It's not up for a BAFTA.
It
went to a festival that is BAFTA qualifying.
Oh. Well, it's got BAFTA. It's associated with BAFTA.
It's not associated. This is why I don't let you talk.
Another proudest moment of mine is when I had afternoon tea with. Tom Stoppard, because I was an understudy on a tour of his, and we went for afternoon tea with him, and I spent the hour talking to him about plays, and he was asked, because I write plays for Strange Fast, he was asking me advice about how to solve writer's block with his plays, as he buttered my toast with honey. Amazing afternoon. And I like to think that play he brought out recently, I had some small psychological effect.
Have you checked out the dedications?
I've looked at it, you know.
Yeah.
And we did keep in contact, in all seriousness. We did keep in contact via email for a good few months afterwards. Although he wanted to come and see a show, and we invited him to Holcombe, but he couldn't make it. So
he's probably very busy.
He was probably just being, you know, don't poke the netter. Don't poke the Welsh netter. But that was a proud moment.
Now, it struck me whilst stalking you on social... following your respective accounts on social media, that you're both very, very versatile and can turn your hands to a number of different genres and styles of theatre. But do you have a soft spot for any particular type?
Personally, I'd love to get back to Shakespeare. Our first open-air show was my version of Midsummer's Dream. I think that Shakespeare, as an actor, I think that you need, especially a British actor, you know, although not necessarily... Oh, that's ridiculous. Oh.
So as a British actor, no, Shakespeare's good.
I don't mean that. I think as a human being, I think... Oh, no, hang on. No, what I mean is, I think as an actor, Shakespeare is very, very important as a grounding for you. When I remember one of the first intellectual experiences I ever had was at school when I first worked out, appreciated a metaphor, you know, and it was a Shakespearean metaphor. And, you know, when that kind of light goes on in your mind, when you're kind of fired up to the language, and then you perform it, and you see people's reaction to the words and the situations. I mean, you feel like a superhero when you're performing Shakespeare. You really do. I think the thing about Shakespeare is it's so versatile, and it's such a universal human condition, that these conditions are explored, that you can really play about with them. You can really, you know, there's the old adage that I'm going to do Romeo and Juliet and set it on the moon, you know. Well, you kind of arguably...
I have seen Romeo and Juliet that was had like a Dune-like backstory, like, yeah, put into it.
Yeah.
And one of the Capulets, maybe? One of the little patriarchal figures had a huge plastic, ball, see-through ball of blood sloshing around in it that was connected to his back by a tube. And he had like an underling that carried it around behind him.
Well, there you go. This is what I'm talking about, you know. And no one would bat an eyelid because it's Shakespeare.
It was mad. And the balcony speech, Juliet was sat on a, those things that acrobats swing off of, those...
Trapeze.
She was sat on a trapeze and he was sort of dangling underneath it upside down, talking to her.
So there you are. There you are.
It had its good points.
You kind of belittled my point a little bit there, Daisy. But it's true.
You can.
Shakespeare's so versatile, you could set it on a trapeze with a ball of blood.
And the apothecary was a weird, like, horse alien's head on a stick.
So 2024, we're doing Romeo and Juliet set on Arrakis with trapeze worms and free blood for the audience. So that's what we're going to do.
Yeah. What was the question?
It was about the soft spot for any particular type of theatre.
So we've both done a lot of TIE, theatre and education, that is. And we both worked for a company called White Horse Theatre.
God bless them.
And some of the plays that we did there were just really beautiful children's theatre, but beautifully thought out, beautifully executed. And I have a real soft spot for just thoughtful puppetry sequences or a good prop that's manipulated in a certain way.
Yeah.
Where some time is taken to figure it out. And it's just magical to watch things like that. That's my personal thing, like thoughtfully executed children's puppetry type stuff. Yeah. With a visual aesthetic.
With trapeze worms.
Trapeze worms.
Which excluding the trapeze worms, there could be a lot more of that in future, but perhaps.
Well, we started doing puppet shows. We did
Hansel and Gretel
at the Norwich Fringe, and that ran. It was very popular. It really was a success, wasn't it? We took that to a number of places after that.
And we want to rework that and expand it and make it.
Yeah,
make it longer. And
I wanted to do a kind of an adapt, because it was all written in verse. I adapted the story and wrote it in verse, mm-hmm. and that was a great achievement for me. And I loved doing it because it was a real challenge. It was, you know, to make things rhyme. So I want to continue that. I want to expand that version and make it more sellable, shall we say? But also, I want to add two more to it, to do the kind of Hansel and Grimm's fairy tale trilogy. You know, much like. You know, like a Lucasfilm trilogy, and just do a few more obscure ones, maybe, you know, but all with the same kind of aesthetic of Daisy's puppetry. Mm. My hopefully whimsical verse and all the gags and stuff, you know. We're very big on audience interaction as well, which you do have to kind of push the audience to do, especially if they're kids. You know, so we're doing this tabletop theatre puppet show, you know, and we're mucking around with the puppets and doing the play and all that. And then they talk to the audience as the puppets. Very simple thing. But the kids have to then do a kind of mental shift where, oh, we can talk to the TV, you know, then, because it's all, you know.
It is tricky talking to the audience while doing puppetry, though, because the whole thing with puppetry is to make the puppets live. Your own eyes don't contact the audience.
Yeah, then
you can't make eye contact with the audience.
Gives the puppet has life, to. You know,
and you have to stare at the back of the puppet's head. And if you don't do that, it all gets sort of ruined and it doesn't quite work. So it is
kind of
difficult
moves, so yeah.
Because I think the children can sort of look to the puppeteer for, like, am I allowed to talk to it sort of thing? But obviously we're not looking at them because that would destroy everything. So there is a bit of a shift. But we also had non-puppetry characters in that. So I played a witch. And I had a very grotesque mask that I used, but she was sort of funny and rude and silly as well.
Yeah.
But there was a certain amount of interaction there as well.
So what do you guys watch for inspiration? Is it theatre? Do you go and see other shows to get inspired?
We do, absolutely. We recently saw, again, Joe Ballard's Jude and the Space Monkey. At North Walsham there, and we saw that, and we had some friends in that, and we went to see that, and that was excellent.
That was Thea's third play.
She was really
five
captivated.
And a half months, yeah, well five done, months Thea. At that point. She's very cultured.
She'll be writing her own blog soon.
She loved it, and it was beautiful seeing that through her eyes.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously, she didn't quite get the whole plot, I don't think.
No,
you know, she's only tiny.
But the movement and the truth of what they were doing.
And there was sort of light show and black light work, where the glow in the dark.
Yeah, they're all great, weren't they?
She was very entranced by
that. Yeah, because they were all really good, the actors. You know,
And we did come out of it going, want to make more theatre.
We want to make more theatre. Yeah. All the actors in it were excellent. Truth is key. You know, especially when you're dealing with kids, truth is key because kids are the most discerning audience you'll ever find. And if you pander to, hey, like me as a kids performer, they're not going to like you. They're going to rip you to pieces. And one of the things that always strikes me about really good kids performers with puppets or in kids shows is the truth.
Yeah, you've got to believe it. You can really tell an actor who's like, oh, this is cringy, oh, I feel awkward, because it just doesn't come across.
Yeah, and, you know, all the actors in Jude and the Space Monkey are excellent. You know, you've got Jamie Sullivan played the lead, and I'm working with him now in Panto, and he was very good, wasn't he?
He was.
But you just really believed him, you know, even as a, you know, a cynical adult such as myself. I really appreciated his craft in that, you know. Mm. And the puppetry was excellent. You've got Georgie Matthews and Ariana. They were terrific.
But we also watch TV and films and stuff. We like, well, you like lots of horror, but we also, both of us, we like sort of surreal things. We both love
Twin Peaks.
David Lynch.
huge David Lynch Twin Peaks fan. Love it. You know that we did a fan show, didn't we? Remember?
We did an immersive fan show. Bungie was ready.
Bungie was not ready for our immersive David Lynch fan show. It's very, very weird. I love that. That was great fun. But yeah, I love sci-fi. Big Star Wars, Star Trek fan. You know, obviously.
I like whimsical things.
Yeah,
as
whimsical
well.
Stuff. Yeah, yeah. But old school horror. Yeah, definitely. You know, all these kind of things influence in terms of the novels that we read as well. You know, I'm a big fan of espionage and classic horror again. And,
I love magic realism, which I think also you can see that through, you know, the puppets and the things I make in costumes. But I love just, it's not fantasy, you know, it's making out like these crazy magical events are real and just casual.
Yeah.
So I love that sort of thing. Mm. But we get a lot of art intake, don't we? Yeah. We're always.
Having said that, mind, I'm a big fan of, and it's probably out of date, but I do love a good war film. I do love a good war film, and I'd like to do a war genre piece. Daisy doesn't like war films, so the obvious
thing about
glamorising war, you know, of course not.
Well, I get a bit man blind. Like, there's just so many men
and guns,
and they're all got helmets on, and I find it really hard to follow because I'm like, who is that? Yeah. I can only see like a tiny part of their face. I don't know who's.
It's just
doing
the way I was brought up, you know. A good war film on a Sunday after lunch, you know, after a good Sunday lunch. That's kind of me, and I want it. That feeling is lovely. That kind of homely feeling, and not just war films. I mean, that Sunday feeling that we all have. It goes with another thing I want to do as well, if I could get the rights, is Last of the Summer Wine on stage.
I think we're a bit young for that at the moment.
Oh, I love it. I love Last of the Summer Wine. It's brilliant. Specifically the first 10 to 12 seasons. So it ran for like 36
I
series.
I only like it if it's got foggy. And yeah, I don't like so the other
we love
fellas.
It. And we, Daisy, she for a Christmas present a couple of years ago, booked us a weekend in Holmfirth.
Where it's all filmed.
I bet
this is a direction you didn't think this was going in.
Yeah. I wish I'd done my research on Last of the Summer Wine.
We wandered around, we saw Compose House, didn't we? Loved it. It was just such a
We were going to dress up and like push each other off of, you know, like gates and fields and things.
And roll down
a hill in a bath. It was a bit chilly in, was it January? So we did.
But it was, so things like that, that kind of whimsy,
nostalgic
kind of throwback to a Sunday, getting your hair dried by your mum, watching Last of the Summer Wine.
See, I don't know. Last of the Summer Wine has this awful feeling of anxiety for me.
Really?
Because
school's the next day.
Last of the Summer Wine or Heartbeat or something comes on.
Blind Date. Was it Blind Date on Sunday?
That was Saturday night, wasn't it?
That theme tune comes on and you realise the countdown is on. But that leads quite nicely into my next question, really, about your early experiences with theatre.
My first experience, so I was the only creative in my family, you know. I'm named after my great-grandfather, who was the only thing I know about him. He was a Jewish soldier and died in World War One. He was an academic teacher. They're all academics and teachers in my family. I was the only creative. And I think that it was either... I always loved telling stories. I was always a very singular child, you know, and I had a great fantasy life in terms of, you know, playing and you know, and creating my own stories and all that kind of thing. I was in a class in November at about 12, and the teacher came in and he said, who wants to play rugby or who wants to do the kids, you know, the Christmas show? And I looked out over that bleak, desolate Newport playing field with these terrified children running and being, you know, abused by the PE teacher. Because it was all about, it was just like, be a man, be, you know, and all that kind of thing. Sorry, Thea. Sorry, you don't have to be a man, Thea, don't worry. And I put my hand up. I said, I'll do it. And I was laughed at. I remember it. I was laughed at, you know, you'll puff and all this kind of nonsense. Well, it's done all right for me now, isn't it? You know, I mean, I've got my own theatre company and all this kind of stuff. And it was a great time. It opened my eyes. The play itself was Fiddler on the Roof, which was a great experience. First real part in a show at 12, 13. And I thought, this is fun. This is, you know, people laugh at my jokes. I'm having fun. You know, that, you know, people are happy. People aren't cold and being shouted at.
Mm.
I swear sometimes when you tell the story, it's also that you got to hang out in a room full of girls.
Oh, I didn't want to mention that.
I have to be perfectly honest. When I picked drama as a GCSE subject at school, that it was for that reason.
Okay, fine. It's because there were girls as well.
Girls!
Girls laughed at my jokes. Girls. I felt validated. That's the only reason I do it. Love me. Like me. Come and see my work. Ah.
How about you, Daisy? What was your upbringing like? You didn't do it for the girls, did you?
Well, I don't know. I think, much like you were saying, it's that sort of rich internal life. I mean, I'm an only child, so I sort of entertained myself a fair bit. And yeah, I had all these sort of, I don't know, worlds that I created in my head. And you know, like, all my toys had like elaborate love triangles, yeah, that would definitely play out and all sorts, yeah, of. So I was very creative. I liked making stories. Again, I liked, yeah, sort of writing things when I was a kid. And when people ask me what I wanted to be when I grew up, I was always like, I want to be an actress, an archaeologist, or an interior designer. And I think in doing theatre design, I sort of managed all of those in a little way.
Sounds like you've achieved a little bit of each, really.
And I mean, I certainly knew, probably even before GCSE level, actually, I knew I wanted to be a theatre designer and I knew I wanted to go to Rose Bruford. I don't know quite how I'd settled on that as a place. Maybe I'd found a prospectus or something, but I was like, that's where I want to go. And it's, I mean, I looked around other places as well, but that is where I did end up going. Also, I mean, like I say, this sort of ADHD thing of like, do a little bit of this, do a little bit of that, go where the dopamine takes you. You know, like, and yeah, I mean, I've done a million different sort of job roles over the years.
Can,
like,
can we do a play called that? Go where the dopamine takes you. Do some R&D on it.
But like, I mean, I do painting, I do puppet making, I do model making, I do taught children. We've been children's entertainers at parties. Wouldn't recommend it. we've done all sorts of things over the years, but yeah.
And probably my final question is, turning back to Strange Fascination, what's the height of your ambition for the company?
Global dominance. No, I think ultimately, when you create a show that you're really proud of, you want as many people to see it as possible. And we've been in the position in the past where we've created something that we've been really proud of, and we've put so much effort into it, and we've put money into it, and time, and we've paid people and whatever, and then we've only done a couple of shows of it, maybe. And it's so disappointing to have thought of all that effort, all that work, and to be so proud of something, and then just to be like, oh, and this handful of people saw it, or whatever. So I think, ultimately, I'd love for us to just get out there more, to go further afield.
Yeah, definitely.
Take our shows to more places. But also, in order to do that, and just for the love of it anyway, I want to get back into theatres. Because we've gotten to this position where, which is great, we're primarily known as a sort of outdoor theatre company at the moment. Although we have done various other shows, various theatre tours in the past. But I'd like for us to get back into theatres, to take our shows and take them here, there and everywhere. And, you know, maybe if it's something fairly small in cast or something that we can rehearse back in, you know, that could just be part of our repertoire, that we take it out every year or so and go different places with it. And just get more eyeballs on our work, essentially. Yeah.
I mean, I agree with Daisy. I want us to see go more places and meet more people, do more things, all this kind of stuff. And just have more experiences with our work as the catalyst and all that, meeting people and just, you know, living this crazy life that we lead. Internationally, even, you know.
Yeah,
I'd love us
lovely,
to do a world tour. Imagine that world tour of one of our plays one day. And also as well, I'd love to move into making short films. Strange Fascination Film is something that we've talked about. I studied film before I studied acting. And like most creatives, film is a massive part. If you work on stage, people, you know, everyone, film is so much in the forefront of people's minds these days, you know, as a medium. I'd love to do some short films. I've been a part of lots of short films, obviously. But yeah, I'd love to do that.
I'd like to get more ambitious as well, like with what we can achieve. So just put more time into things. I mean, because time is a big thing. There's that triangle, isn't there, which is can you get something done cheaply? Can you get something done fast? Can you get something done good quality? And the thing with this triangle is you can only ever have two. You can only ever have two of those. So I would like to put more time and more money into what we do and just make more really beautiful things. Because I love making. I love making.
I want to do a Western and have... No, listen.
Thank you.
No, I'm just jumping in there. Sorry, love. I'm just jumping in there. I want to do a Western. I started writing this Western, it's open air theatre Western, right? And have actual horses in it and stuff. I'm going to do that. We're going to do that.
See, I'm thinking more like, you know, I was going to make a film about a talking rock.
You designed it all. She designed it and everything.
I started designing it. But
it was fascinating. She designed it. It was so beautiful.
Crazy, like...
Yeah.
Almost sort of labyrinth style-y, like, talking rock character in it.
Yeah. And she's drawn it everything. And it's wonderful. And it's waiting to be made.
All sorts of things like that. Just really ambitious puppet work where... I mean, we did a little bit of it in Jungle Book where the movements were really sort of complicated and you know, the tendons and the legs of this puppet moved. It was more or less a life-size 10-year-old boy, this puppet, wasn't it? A little bit smaller than life, but, like, all the tendons and the fingers and everything moved realistically. And But, yeah, just I'd like to do more really ambitious, like, set designs where things fold down or come off and get used in a different way and put back, and that really, I don't know, thoughtful.
That's quite hard with outdoor theatre, isn't it?
Yes. That's why I want us to go in. Yeah. And I want lighting. I really miss lighting.
Yeah, we did a version of Ghost Stories by M.R. James, and I'd only just seen Suspiria. Big fan of Italian horror, and Suspiria is beautiful. It's wonderful, and it's very colour orientated. So I was very influenced by the colours for this. So I did A Whistle and I Come to My Lad and A Warning to the Curious, and I adapted them. Female leads, different storyline, all this kind of thing. First act was the one story, second act was next, and the first act was red, the second act was blue. And it's amazing how impactful lighting states obviously can be. You know, we solve so many problems and created so much more.
You just don't have that outside.
You cannot do anything outside.
Everything is just, you know, your audience sees everything that's happening, which is its own, you know.
Don't get me wrong. You can achieve
its own type of creativity.
Yeah, you can achieve great things outdoors.
But I miss lighting.
I miss lighting.
Well, I'm conscious I've taken enough of your time.
Not at all.
So, good luck with the new stages, Panto.
Thank you.
And good luck, of course, with Strange Fascination in 2023 and beyond.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ray. It's been a pleasure. Cheers. Yeah.
So there we have it. That was the fantastic Daisy and Simon and Thea too from Strange Fascination Theatre. Now, I don't know if there's any official word on when they'll be in action again with Alice Through the Looking Glass, but it's definitely worth keeping an eye out for, as I'm sure after a bit of time off, there'll be like a loaded spring on those first few shows. You can also catch Simon, of course, in the new stages pantomime, Sleeping Beauty, at the People's Pop-Up Theatre in North Walsham, alongside local favourites such as Joe Ballard and Georgie Matthews. It's on from the 21st to the 28th of December, and tickets for that are available via newstages.co.uk. Now, I appreciate this episode is a bit of a long one, but I'm still going to give a quick shout out to some of the other pantomimes going on in the region. Firstly, over on the Norfolk-Suffolk border, Red Duck Productions and Upshoot Theatre jointly present Jack and the Beanstalk, which will be at the fabulous Fisher Theatre in Bungay from the 17th to the 31st of December. Over in Cambridgeshire, you can catch Robin Hood being performed at the beautiful Saffron Hall on the grounds of Saffron Walden County High School. It's on from the 23rd to the 29th of December. Back in Suffolk, and the Devon Players are performing Robin Hood and Babes in the Wood from the 23rd of December to the 2nd of January at Seckford Theatre in Woodbridge. And finally, I went to see Sand Ideas Theatre's Goldilocks and the Three Bears at the Madamaka on opening night, which was fantastic. The full review is available on my website, but I definitely recommend it for those in Norwich, particularly as a cost-effective but just as high-quality alternative to the big-budget Norwich Theatre Panto. It continues until the 30th of December. As usual, I'll post links to all the shows on my social media pages. And that's all, folks, this time. Please do have the most wonderful Christmas and New Year, however you're spending it. I'll be back in 2023, no wiser, possibly fatter, and just as irritating as ever. I've got a couple more shows that I'll be seeing that I'll post reviews for on my website between now and then. But in the meantime, take care of yourselves and go watch some Panto. Ho, ho, ho!